The U.S. commander in charge of NATO troops in Afghanistan is apologizing for the improper disposal of Qurans and other Islamic religious materials at an American airbase north of Kabul. The materials were used by detainees who had been incarcerated at the base, and they were included in trash that U.S. soldiers took to a pit where garbage is burned. The incident led to an angry anti-American protest by more than 1,000 Afghans, and yesterday General John Allen said there will be an investigation.
We are thoroughly investigating the incident, and we are taking steps to ensure this does not ever happen again. I assure you, this was not intentional in any way.
After more than 10 years, the U.S. has started its withdrawal from Afghanistan, a process that ended for the Soviet Union 23 years ago this month. The BBC's Louise Hidalgo reports.
The Soviet Union is finally out of Afghanistan. The last of their soldiers crossed the border to end a military adventure the Russians now admit was a mistake.
It's February the 15th, 1989, 9 years and 50 days after the Soviet Union first sent its army into Afghanistan. A generation of young Russians had been sent to fight, and a million Afghans had died. But now a new leader in Moscow had ordered the troops to withdraw, just like so many of the armies that had invaded Afghanistan before them.
9 years and 15,000 deaths after going into Afghanistan, the last Soviet troops were finally coming home. The withdrawal completed in good order, but the army defeated in the task it had been sent to perform. The pullout, a result of Mr. Gorbachev's view of the world, just as the invasion had been of Leonid Brezhnev's.
The withdrawal had been spread over months. The Kremlin sent Russian and foreign journalists to the border town of Termez to watch the last soldiers arrive back on Soviet soil. Among the journalists was a young American reporter, Paul Hofhines.
Basically, the Soviets were out, but they very much wanted to be seen to be out. That was very important. And so they staged a giant triumphal military parade right across the bridge.
A long convoy of armored vehicles trundled across the bridge. Bringing up the rear on foot was the commander of Russian forces in Afghanistan, General Boris Gromov, the last Russian soldier to leave.
With this, our nine-year stay has ended. I'd also like to say that our soldiers who have lived through these 9 years must have memorials erected in their honour.
General Gromov was one of the only Russians that Paul Hofhines saw cry that day.
And you'd have to ask him what exactly that emotion was. Was it relief? Was it sadness? I don't know. Probably relief. I mean, one of the things that people have forgotten in the intervening years was how unbelievably brutal that war was. The Afghans were not happy about the Soviets being there. They would do horrible things with the prisoners that they would capture.
Even as the huge armored convoy had lumbered through northern Afghanistan to reach Termez, it had been harried by the Afghan guerrillas, the Mujahideen, 30,000 of whom were already encircling Kabul.
The soldiers were just unbelievably relieved. And the most shocking thing was just to see how young they were. I mean, these were little kids manning these armed personnel carriers, 18, 19 years old, many of them unshaven, really sort of filthy, delighted to be out. People here forget about this. This was the glasnost period. And glasnost was a very peculiarly Soviet form of cultural revolution. I mean, basically everyone was supposed to be open and say what was on their mind. And the soldiers all came across, and we all took their pictures, and they stopped, and they got off and started talking to us and told us what was on their mind, which was they really didn't see the war as having been winnable. They couldn't figure out quite what they'd gotten themselves involved in, and there was really just nothing but relief from these young kids.
Not everyone who crossed the Friendship Bridge that day was relieved, however. Babrak Esas was an Afghan journalist who traveled the 400 kilometers with the convoy to the border. Now that the Mujahideen had driven out a superpower, there would be a fight for the leadership of his country.
There were peace in major cities. There were girls were going to school, women were working at that time, and there we have witnessed a modern society like Europe at that time.
And as you crossed back into Afghanistan, you were fearful that it might all be at risk.
Everybody knew that the government at that time was not that strong to defend itself from the opposition pressure.
The Soviets had left behind an Afghan army 160,000 strong. They'd also stockpiled fuel and flour to help the government of the man they'd left in charge, President Najibullah. But in Kabul, as the last Russian troops slipped out of the country, there was a sense of foreboding. People queued for visas to leave as the opposition forces of the Mujahideen gathered around the city.
Kabul remained quiet today. A few more military vehicles were on the streets. More guns are being carried in the markets. Mujahideen letters had warned people to stay inside. Another supply convoy entered the city today on the road coming south from the Soviet border. The second in 3 days. The government has been stockpiling food and fuel, preparing for any guerrilla attempts to block the supply routes. A large military convoy also arrived with weapons, tanks, and ammunition against what Mujahideen have warned will be their biggest campaign against the city.
Massive military aid, coupled with infighting among the rival Afghan factions, allowed the government that Moscow had left behind in Kabul to cling on for 3 more years, while America continued to fund Najibullah's rivals. He was finally toppled in 1992, but the civil war continued until in 1996, when the Taliban entered Kabul.